Hi there. Before we get started on this interview that Marcus Mooney did with Sabrina Rojek, myself, on my sexual journey, I have to let you know the first 6 minutes of this video, now turned to audio, has been lost. Please go actually watch the video interview on YouTube or on www.sexyincharlotte.com. Thanks so much. And just remember, you're coming in 6 minutes into the interview.
Okay.
All right. So earlier we talked about your favorite childhood moment.
Sure.
But let's go into another place. What was a moment that you would like to forget or that you have tried to forget?
I can't really say I would want to forget any of them. And that would be the same for really having any regrets or any of that. There's things I could have absolutely done differently. I could have had a different childhood and all the rest, but then that's all the stuff that makes me me. That's all the stuff that I learned through, that I worked through, that I suffered through to get to where I'm at now. Right. And I can't say that if any of those things were taken away, then I would show up as the same person. I probably wouldn't. So, it would have been nice to, you know, for a couple of things, but, yeah, overall, no regrets.
Okay. So here's this beautiful, church-going, vibrant little girl who wants to sing. But the story had some twists and turns somewhere in the midst of all of everything. Like all of us, you know, we face different life events. Something happened around 3 years old that changed your life, you know, one might say. What was that?
Well, it didn't change my life. It was more of, you know, there's these pivotal points that we have in our life that we can begin to remember some of the things that formed us, or whether they formed us, informed us of who we were or becoming. And so I remember seeing a glimpse of a porn. It certainly wasn't something people were trying to have me see. It was me being where I wasn't supposed to be. And I remember knowing exactly what it was. And to give even a bit of background, I'm not sure if I was molested before then. We do have a huge family history of it. And so a lot of that type of talk I was around or heard, even, you know, going into 7, 8, 9 and so on. So I'm not sure at that young age knowing or why I knew, but I knew that that was sex. I knew what was going on at 3 years old. And then there were other pivotal moments like that as well, where before the age of 6 years old, then I knew how to give myself an orgasm.
Now, hold on a second. You know, you got to let everybody digest this. And we're talking about 6 years old.
Yeah.
So how did you know what was going on at that time? I mean, something, you know, maybe had a lot to do with what you've seen at three. Mm-hmm. But tell us how, you know, how does a six-year-old know what's going on sexually to say I'm you know, masturbating or giving myself an orgasm?
Sure. You don't have those words. You don't know those terminologies. I did get them not too much longer after that, just in conversations and things like this. But it's, you know, when you look back on something, then you realize, oh, that's the word for it. And that's what it was. So I knew how to give myself those sensations. Then that would bring me to orgasm, the same as what I would call it now as an adult. Just not those words to it until I got older.
Wow. That's very interesting. And I'm sure the average person, you know, it would see, will feel the same way.
Well, actually, it's really not all that uncommon. Like now I know that, but even my parents then, they didn't have the tools to know that a lot of kids also experiment with other kids, and it's to point of orgasm. And that's absolutely something that parents don't really want to hear. But it's the truth, and it's not a justification of what I did, but it's actually, a lot of people call it age appropriate. Mm-hmm. Whether or not you feel that it is, it's what's happening.
So at 8 years old, there were some other changes, mm-hmm. That took place as well. Tell us about that.
By then too, I had also found family members, porn stashes, their magazines, and being right. very interested in it. So, you know, the environment and the talking about these molestations, whether or not, again, that it happened when I was younger, I don't remember. I don't have recollections of that. But being hypersexual and really aware of my body and what people could do and what men and women did together. So absolutely knew what sex was at 7, 8, and 9 years old. Matter of fact, you know, I was in that neighborhood that played not hide and go seek, but hide and go get it. And you have a bunch of these, you know, 7, 8, and 9 year olds knowing exactly what to put where. And, right. you know, again, that's not what any parents want to hear, but you know, and this was 1989. I'm sure kids are doing the same thing then as they were before that,
right.
you know, as they are now. Very and, I was in that type of environment, you know, and it's not a bad neighborhood. It wasn't any of those things. It was just kids hanging out. And right. That's what happens.
So when these discoveries were made, we talked about your background as far mm-hmm. as, you know, your parents being youth ministers, when after these discoveries were made, did it change your relationship with your parents at all? Did it change your viewpoint? Did you become a little isolated as far as what you felt was going on and maybe some of the standards that they held or what they taught?
So there was a whole lot of, you know, if you come from any sort of a religious background, and that's just the reality to speak plainly for me anyways, is that the majority anyways is going to be spirituality versus biology for your entire life. and my dad did, you know, wasn't really involved in a whole lot of these things. It was always my mom that I talked to or went to church, you know, to go see the pastor with or to whatever it was that felt was necessary to, help me not be this way or just to help me.
Right.
Or
to do what your mom might have felt was correct.
Right. And what the church thought right. was correct right. and all right. of the rest. And so what it did create though, I don't want to speak for other people, but I absolutely know that this is their truth as well. But what my truth was then is what do you do with this? Why would something be created? Meaning our biology, our hormones, these desires, these wants, these sensations and all of this stuff and all of it's bad. And then what do you do with that? And there's not really a whole lot of people to talk to. And my experience then also was, even though there was all of this exposure to sexuality, most of it really negative coming from, you know, my family of origin, that there wasn't many places to have a healthy sex talk. It certainly wasn't coming from the church, certainly wasn't coming from my family. And then who else do you ask? You don't ask anybody else yet, but you get it from your friends. Right. And again, we're talking these 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, you know,
right.
year olds on you figuring it out for yourself and whatever it was that you found and all of this. So it absolutely going into my adulthood also, until I released those beliefs for myself, mm-hmm. where there was a complete non-acceptance of self and completely raised with shame and guilt and hell in a handbasket and all the rest of it. And what do you do with it? Like I said, it becomes a biology versus a spirituality or a religious viewpoint. And biology is a hard thing to fight against.
Right. And that's definitely true. So let's fast forward a little bit. 17 years old now.
Mm-hmm.
And we're about to embark on another journey in our life. Not too far from, I think you ended up going to the military. Is that correct?
When I was 19.
When you're 19.
Yep.
But at 17, something did happen. You got your first boyfriend, right?
Sure.
So what was that like?
So, you know, again, as far as the big picture of things, the most pivotal that happened there is, and giving a little bit more of that lead up, I always felt fairly isolated that, when we moved from California up to Washington State, I went from a place that was predominantly Black and Mexican and maybe 5 white families on the block, my family being included. Cause I told you I have a blended family. And then we moved to Washington State where at the height of it, there was literally 5 Black people in the entire high school. And the rest was predominantly white and, some Mexicans and a lot of Native Americans. And anyway, with that to say, as far as dating and as far as feeling accepted and part of the group, that this all already played into part of something that came from my past, which I've told you before, but in my family's Hispanic from Spain, a lot of mixtures and all of this, the men in our family got to do pretty much whatever they wanted to do. The women had babies and the men cheated and drank and did all of these other things. And the women stayed at home and kept the secrets and stayed very bitter. And so my family, women weren't valued. And I'm going into this because I was extremely angry then, bringing up that, you know, being a woman or being a girl, that being a girl meant being vulnerable and meant being weak. And so I fought against that a lot. To all my friends were always guys, you know, I was always that tomboy anyway, and to be that person. My friends were always, again, the guys. I got along with girls for a little bit, but then in high school, not so much, and all the rest. And so then when it came into dating, into this place where I don't look at all like anybody else that's there. I mean, even now I still don't look like anybody else, but especially then, you know, that there's, to have that identity group, that it does matter. I absolutely was in sports. I absolutely had all my church friends. So I had these places where I had these pockets of people where I had lots of friends, but always felt very lonely. I felt very different. I also, not to say that no one else was aware of their sexuality, because they absolutely were. And some of them were having sex really young. And I didn't until I was 17, had my first boyfriend. And so that would have been the pivotal point. When I'm saying all of those things, is why then this was also significant, because I didn't have a boyfriend until I was my senior year. I was a 17-year-old senior, whereas all my other friends had when they were freshman year or sophomore year, if not before that, or your little friends that you thought were your boyfriends. And so that pivotal time then was to have the boyfriend and then to choose to give that person my virginity. And my whole story, as far as my sexuality is concerned, which gets kind of crazy in there in a few spaces, is the one thing that I can absolutely say that I was completely grateful for, is that I loved him and he loved me. It wasn't one of those situations where it felt forced or conned, or didn't care about that person, didn't know if they cared about you, because that really does matter and how it begins to shape, I feel, for these young folks, you know, these, that when you are having sex, that those first encounters kind of set you up on how you're going to play this game, how you're going to do this. And so I fortunately had a very wonderful, loving, explorative experience in that whole thing. Mm-hmm. And then shortly thereafter decided to play the game a little different.
Expound on it a little bit. So we go from there to 19. What branch of service, by the way?
Navy.
Navy. So you're in the Navy, and in the Navy, you got pregnant,
yep.
Right? And you know, you experienced motherhood. So how did motherhood change the scope of everything?
Well, I want to back that up too, because again, the other part that's most pivotal is that after I had the boyfriend and we broke up, I was heartbroken. I didn't sleep with anybody. I didn't want to have no parts of anybody for over a year.
Right.
And there was a guy that was constantly pursuing me. And he had a girlfriend that lived somewhere else. So I was the other. And really being that girl that wanted to be the cool one, that didn't freak out and fuss, that you didn't, you know, I wanted you to want me, but I didn't want to come on strong. I didn't want to be that person. And, you know, I liked hanging out, so I didn't want to be pushed away in any sense or whatever. But he really, you know, kept pursuing that. And I, after a year and some odd later, then I actually finally had sex with this other guy. And the interesting thing then, in having that relationship and meeting his girlfriend and family and pretending like everything was all gravy, it literally was then, and that was the most pivotal point in my sexuality. I mean, even more so than me being a mom and all the rest. That was the motherhood is me as a person growing and developing. But again, this sexual journey thing on why it was that I became what I became is not because of this person,
right,
but because of this person.
Right, right.
I decided I was never going to be hurt like this again. I was going to play the game like the guys did, which meant have sex with whoever I wanted to without shame, without guilt, without emotional attachment. Later for that. Right. Because that sucked, you know, and that was a year and a half, almost a 2-year process of being this other and wanting to be the primary and so new in the game.
Right, right.
You know, if you want to call that, to even know what to say, how to approach it, how to do with all of these feelings and all of this hurt, and me allowing myself to still be hurt by being around this person, them not even knowing it was hurting, just the whole freaking thing.
Right.
So that's really the biggest moment of full-on shenanigans that I decided to launch into, thinking I was besting hurt.
Yeah, so we're 22, 23 years old. We've had a lot of life changes. Mm-hmm. From 17, your first boyfriend, and then in the midst of that, I think Tom, your father, who, you know, basically raised you, mm-hmm. passed away. Mm-hmm. And then you went to the military, mm-hmm. new venture, pregnant, became a mom. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you have all these hurtful things from all these different relationships. So there's a lot going on there.
Yeah.
And out of this springs what?
After, you know, still being in the game and the mentality that I was, which was, again, I can be with whoever I want to be, whenever I want to be. And I didn't have a lot of boyfriends at that point, not a whole lot of titles.
Right.
however, I did get you said I got pregnant. I got pregnant. You didn't say it. I did it. And I was cheated on. And that was the first time that I was ever cheated on. That created a whole nother level to the game,
right?
You know, right. And to who I was going to be in it and how I was, again, I was going to play that game. And then from there, I became a cheater as well. And that's a whole nother topic on what that looks like. But then, you know, just doing whatever I wanted to, whenever I felt like, for a good amount of time with, at whatever whims I had, then that lent to me giving into obsessions, compulsions when it comes to sexuality. And what I later then realized was a sex addict.
Oh, wow. Sex addict. Now that's a pretty deep title. Mm-hmm. When we think of addictions, we usually think of things that cause people to, you know, draw away from their normal routine. Mm-hmm. But how does a sex addict? How does a sex addict become a sex addict? Were you a sex addict before you realized you were a sex addict? How does that happen?
When you say it like that, then probably so. I mean, just like any other addiction, really, then people tend to have precursors and family histories and all of the rest of that. And given the hypersexualization and being around the exposures and the molesting and the things that I did experience,
right.
the ones that I'm aware of and that I know of, absolutely. And of course, now knowing, especially in my background, this is very much a way that people that have been sexually abused or any of those things act out, is that they usually become very, very reserved, or they can become very hypersexual. And so in that, and the difference between somebody that likes sex and a sex addict is exactly what you were talking about for other addictions. It's when you start, really, it's where it interrupts your regular daily life, mm-hmm. where you start putting yourself in situations to get that fix. And right. so if you imagine somebody who's, you know, shooting up with something or, you know, whatever it is, and the situations they've put themselves in that we look at, like, oh my gosh, you don't do that. You know, that's not safe,
right.
where you no longer care for your own safety. It was exactly that. And it really would become an itch.
Right.
And you hear addicts talk about that. You even see them, some of them physically itching, that it would, sometimes my palms would even itch like that. And it would become an obsession to a compulsion, that was not healthy in any way.
Well, I can see an alcoholic, you know, being kind of down in the dumps. Mm-hmm. It's cost them, you know, maybe a job or a relationship, because they've gotten so far, as far as their dependency on alcohol. It's even made it to where they're incoherent most mm-hmm. of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Even the drug addict maybe finding themselves in a crack house,
mm-hmm.
You know, at the lowest of low points.
Mm-hmm.
But how does the sex addict feel when they look up one day and, you know, they realize, man, I'm a sex addict and this is bothering me? Did you feel ugly? Did you feel hurtful? Did you feel shameful?
Hmm.
How did you feel?
So mine was more like, what the F? Because how I realized I've really got a problem is that one problem in itself, which was I drank too much a couple of times and I blacked out. And during those times that I had blacked out, the other person that I was seeing at the time actually told me that we were feeling all frisky and fabulous and that we were going to go down to the bedroom and go do our thing, and that he didn't do anything threatening. Nothing happened except we walked into the room and I started backing into the corner, freaking out, like, don't hurt me and don't come near me. And he's just like, whoa, 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 what just happened? And that happened twice. Mm-hmm. So after that second time, and after being like, are you joking? God. And at that point too, I thought I had worked through some of those things, or, and again, not realizing that it was even sex addict. It was me in a healthy way, being very honest with everyone else and expressing my sexuality and having a good time at it, not realizing that it was compensating and covering up for really my defense mechanisms, me not wanting to get hurt, me spreading the perfect guy in between five or six, mm-hmm. because then if one ever went away, it never really fully hurt because I right. still had five other people and I could replace them easily. It really is a temporary fix for a really like anything else, right. any other drug or anything. It's a temporary fix for those feelings of loneliness or not being loved or any of the rest of that stuff. And so it was after hearing it, especially that second time, like that first one, I could have played it off as some blacked out drunken fluke, which again right. on its own is not amazing.
Right.
But then for it to happen a second time. And I literally that next day I was like, I've got a real freaking problem and I need to figure out what it is. And it was at that moment that I started looking up things and where could I go to school and what could I do and all of the rest of that.
And that leads to my next question, because, you know, I was thinking there comes a time in most people's lives where they say, you know what, I have to change something. Mm-hmm. It has to be different. And I think you're saying that was the moment for you. So what did change look like once you started looking things up? Where did it start for you?
It was a process. It was, so at that point I had already decided that I was going to be a sex therapist and had, while I was still in the military before I got out, started to get my degree, finished it up, my bachelor's in psychology, and then found a program that did a master's doctorate for sexology. And, I hadn't attended yet a SAR, which is a sexual attitude restructuring seminar. Mm-hmm. And that was when I looked that up for my school and decided, okay, I'm going to go to that first. And then going to that and being just in that type of environment. And then also that's when all the anger started to come up. I was pissed at how I was raised. Mm-hmm. I was angry with my parents for not knowing better. I was angry with the church for not knowing better on how to better equip and have the type of conversations that I needed to have about what was going on with my body, what the issues were, how to have communication with guys, how to, you know, how to have boundaries. What the hell were those? You know, I wasn't taught boundaries, that this is my space and not just my space and my body, but then how to say no, you know, and what that looks like and what that means to me and that I'm worth something else. So I had all this anger come up, and I think that's absolutely the first place for a lot of people is to recognize what was missing that you didn't get, and kind of going through that anger and then that grieving. I had an absolute grieving. And then from there, it was a slower process than what it might've been for other people. Then it was still over the span of a few years that I did behaviors that still made me feel bad, but it was each time got me that much closer. And that was just my process. Other right. people would have immediately been like, this, that's not working. Do something else.
Right.
For me, that's not how I learn things. I learn it the hard way. So there was absolutely times that I still would be like, oh, why did you do that? Oh, why did you do that? And then finally you get to enough, oh, why did you do that? Then you get to a point that then it stops. Like, this is ridiculous. Right. And so it was a bunch of little steps for me. It wasn't this magnificent, wonderful turn. And as I got older and I matured more, then I had a better understanding too of what was going on for me, what were my issues, and now how do I want to relate differently to others?
Right. Relating differently to others. Let's stay there for a minute. So you decided to become a sex therapist. Mm-hmm. You started going through the educational process. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that and a little bit about where you are today and what you offer others who may be going through the same thing.
Sure. So, the heavens open up and the angels sing in 2004, I want to say 2005. And I had a year and something left before I got out of the military and was freaking out because I went in the military to go to school.
Right.
And I had my daughter and, you know, things Set got back. Busy.
Life.
And all of a sudden I was like, holy shit, what am I going to do? You know, like, where am I going to go? What do I have when I get out? And so I had changed my major four different times. And so finally I sat and I wrote on a piece of paper, what are the things that have interested me? What have been the themes? Psychology, sex, relationships. Those were the things. I wrote a bunch of other stuff. But when I circled them and I Googled or, you know, Yahooed, sex, relationships, psychology, it came up with sex therapist. And literally in that moment, the heavens opened up and I was like, that was it. Oh my gosh. And so then I looked up schools and I found that master's doctorate program that I told you about. And then while I was there, I realized that the degrees that they offered were only for becoming a sexologist or a sex coach, and not a sex therapist. And so the difference is that a sex coach or a sexologist can be an educator. They can, teach you on how to do other things. But the minute someone starts talking about emotional issues and all of that stuff, you have to refer them to a therapist.
Right.
The majority of your issues would get resolved at the therapist, and yes, they would never even make it back to you, right, as the sexologist, right, you know? And so I knew that I wanted to do both of those things. So I stopped that program, and I knew I'd finish that to go then to another school that actually was doing counseling therapy degrees.
Right.
So, and then again, in that whole process, learning more about myself and the whys and where things came from and really unraveling and learning how many defenses I had, and these categories and these pots to be able to act the way that I did. And again, under this guise that I was this wonderfully healthy, open, sexually open, because I could talk to you about it. I could tell you the goods and the bads that had happened and all the rest, and tried my best not to hurt people along the way. I didn't lie and I didn't do all the rest. And so it was this process. And so now where I'm at, it's still a process, right, you know, there's still been times when I thought, okay, I no longer act out in my addiction at all in the ways. And so what that looks like, I don't act out all in those compulsions. I don't just up and go leave to go find someone in the middle of God knows nothing. I don't know where, right, and I don't know who they are to go, right, put myself in some crazy, strange situation.
Right.
That's what sex addiction looks like. That looks like where you go out on a street and you don't know that person, and that doesn't matter either.
Right.
It's really all about that fix. I don't do that anymore. And I don't really have those urges, but once I've had it now happen in 3 years,
right,
and it freaked me the heck out, locked myself in, and I was like, oh my God, I thought I was over this.
Right.
But it just lets you know that this is an ongoing thing that you choose to act on or you choose not to. And choosing then how to relate differently to others, that I don't want to objectify others before they can objectify me,
right,
which is what I was doing. I want more of that connection. I want more of that intimacy. Intimacy scared the shit out of me before, if you would have brought that up, where other people are like, isn't that what it's all about?
Right.
No, not for people like me, not for people that was acting out only on physical. You're not here to be my friend. You're not here to kiss me. We're not here to do all that stuff. You're here to do your business. Now I'm going to do my business and we move on. And so now that's where I'm at, but really it starts first with going to some of those dark places with people. And that's really what I offer. You know, I've got all these other titles that we talked about, all these things that I do, and these coaching and this life, this, and this business, that, public speaking and educator. But when it comes down to it, if everything else was gone, I'm not afraid of those dark places. I'm not afraid of the demons. I'm not afraid of the sexual demons. And that's not something a lot of people want to deal with, because it is, it's a crazy place to be. And it can be very greasy underworld,
right,
and a very scary place to be at.
Yes.
And I know that I can be of help there because I've been there, and not just in sexual addiction. I've done all kinds of crazy stuff. I've seen all kinds of crazy stuff. I know why I've done the things that I've done and what dark place that came from, my shadow, you know, that came from, and, distorted fantasies and all the rest. So I absolutely can help with all of those things, as well as all of those other things, as, right, we've talked about. How do we look at those real? How do we look at them plain? And how do we realize that we can absolutely shift these and we can choose differently for ourselves?
Okay. So in a few minutes here, I want you to take a few minutes and I want you to look directly in the camera and I want you to talk to those folks out there. You know, there are many people who have stories similar to yours, or who have, you know, some other things that they're going through, issues in life, relationships, mm-hmm, people who feel like their childhood was a letdown. Mm-hmm. They didn't get what they needed to get. Mm-hmm. They were misinformed, mm-hmm, bamboozled, run amok, you know, hoodwinked. Yeah.
All of that.
You know, all of that. And,
yeah,
and life has pretty much dealt the bad hand, you know, the failed blow. But they're trying to recover. They're trying to turn all of that negativity into a success story, yep, much like yourself.
Yep.
What is it that you can tell them to get them started and to, mm-hmm, also let them know who you are and what you're about and how they can get connected with you?
Okay.
Right there.
Okay. So I'm Sabrina Rojek, and I'm not even a survivor. I'm a thriver. And how we get there absolutely is being able to be real with yourself, be honest with yourself. And that's the beginning of anything. Sometimes that requires a therapist like myself, or a coach, or a friend, or a pastor, or whoever you go to help you know that you can pull yourself out of that dark place, because some people do get lost there. But you can find those people that can help. So that's one of the areas in which I help. Being honest with yourself, getting the help if you need the help, and then realizing that for me, all of the defenses that I thought I had created to keep me from hurting, getting hurt, absolutely did the opposite. I absolutely hurt myself more and kept myself from getting more of what it was that I wanted. Most of us want more connection, better relationships, showing up more for ourselves. I talked about boundaries earlier. Maybe some of you don't know what those were because I didn't. We weren't taught with them. And it's learning more about boundaries and how to say more of what you want, to communicate effectively, to get more of what you want pretty much in every aspect of life, especially in sexuality, to give you tools on how to be better and do better with that. So it's SabrinaRojek.com, Sabrina Rojek Speaks Sex. You can email me, you can call us. I do coaching, public speaking, education, or maybe you just have a question, send your question. And I'm absolutely happy to honestly and openly answer that as best I can.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Ms. Rojek, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
You're definitely an extraordinary individual. You have a wonderful story, and I'm pretty sure many people are going to be blown away by you know what you survived and how you've taken it all and turned it into a means to help other people. So excited for what the future holds for you, and wish you much success.
Thank you. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that interview that Marcus Mooney shared with me on my sexual journey, a little bit of it anyways. Please feel free to send any questions that you have to sexyincharlotte@gmail.com. Don't forget to visit us at www.sexyincharlotte.com to listen in, and on WGIVcharlotte.com and on iTunes and YouTube and everywhere you can possibly find us on social media. Thank you so much for sharing this very personal journey with me. Also, please feel free to share this link or the video with your friends, and let's start truly working towards healing. Thank you again. Many blessings.